Teachers, administrators, and other school staff play an important role.
Education can be a shining light, and it's really the equalizer for everybody.
You are making a difference in people's lives, including your students.
You can have a really bad day at school and still realize that what you're doing is making a bigger difference.
We are the best profession in the world next to doctors, but even a doctor had a teacher.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now.
NBA playoff action is in full swing. We're in the conference semifinals now, and the action is heating up. As the playoff action heats up, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, is back with a can't-miss offer. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on any team to win and get $150 in free bets if they do. If you are looking to turn a small bet into a big payday, DraftKings Sportsbook Same Game Parlays is the place to do that. Create your very own parlay by combining multiple bets, like which team will win, total threes made, assists, total rebounds, and more. And boom, you have a chance for an even bigger payout. Right now, all customers can place a same game parlay with three or more legs and get a free backup with $25 if one leg does not hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code ForgottenSeasons, and bet just $5 on any NBA team to win their game, and get $150 in free bets if they do. That's promo code ForgottenSeasons, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
Only thing unplugged is Forgotten Seasons.
Welcome back to Forgotten Seasons. This is your host, Dylan Dreyfus. Today we got one that I'm really excited about, a guy that is definitely a fan favorite on Forgotten Seasons, Andre Miller. Talking 2010 Portland Trailblazers, we got Brandon Roy, Greg Oden, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Andre leading the charge. Kind of a tough season for the Blazers. Yes, they won 50 games, but both Greg Oden and Brandon Roy saw injuries really take over their career. Despite all that, Andre did his thing. He played all 82 games. He scored a career-high 52 points and helped salvage what could have been a disaster of a season into a really respectable one. As we have covered before, the West 2010, one of the best years ever. All eight teams that made the playoffs had 50 or more wins. That's only the second time that's happened. 2008 is that other year. Let's get into it now. Quick reminder, check out the rest of the Showtime basketball catalog, all the Smoke KG certified What's Burning Iverson Classic, bringing you guys the heat every week. Definitely tap in. Make sure to drop a rating and a review. Let's get into this one. Andre Miller on the 2010 Blazers begins right now. Welcome everybody to Forgotten Seasons. Welcome to Andre Miller, the professor. Dre, how's it going today, man?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into Portland talk, I want to quickly ask you about your experience last week in Memphis at the Iverson Classic. We were there together, had a lot of NBA guys there, J.R. Smith, Bonzi Wells, Steven Jackson, Darius Miles. What was your experience? And also speak on the game's significance to you as it relates to AI.
Yeah, man, Memphis was a great trip for me. I've been out of the loop as far as traveling, you know, especially with COVID and being around basketball. And you know, one of my neighbors, Jelani McCoy, who helps out with production and so forth, invited me to come out there and check it out. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I hadn't followed Allen Iverson, but, you know, he's doing great things for his community, the community of Memphis, you know, giving these kids a platform to express their talent and go on to hopefully, you know, be successful citizens or whether NBA or whatever, but he's doing his job as far as giving back to the community. So, you know, his legacy is definitely living on. You know, I enjoyed playing against him all those years. You know, it was tough, but you know, he's one of the greatest competitors that ever played a game. So I enjoyed just being out there and being a part of it and supporting it.
Well, we'll have to have you back next year. And I think I speak for the entire Showtime family, but you know, whenever you feel like hopping around, you're always welcome.
Yeah.
So headed into the season of focus today, 2010 Portland Trailblazers. This is your 11th season in the league, your fifth team. The Blazers are coming off a 54-win season in 2009. They got Brandon Roy, who's one of the bright young superstars in the game. They bring in you and Juwan Howard in the offseason. You sign a 3-year deal with Portland. Quickly take us through just your decision-making process in that summer, who you were talking to and why you ultimately ended up in Portland.
Well, the summer was tough, you know, leaving Philly. You know, I wanted to stay in Philly and play with those young guys and build from there. And it wasn't too many options for me as far as, you know, navigating through the free agency. And Portland came aboard and, you know, offered me a deal. You know, I saw who they had on the team and, you know, what their expectations was of me and trying to help them get over the hump and get to the playoffs. And I thought it was a fit, good fit. You know, it was probably one of my only, maybe one of maybe two or three options that I thought was the best for me. So I took that and, you know, the rest was history. I had a good time there and, you know, we went to the playoffs a couple of times and, you know, it was a good experience.
Mm. So when I was reading, looking back at the pieces that were coming out back then, no surprise, but the GM, Kevin Pritchard, really praised early on just the veteran presence that you brought to the room. He called you the director. And obviously, you know, you were in the league for a little over 15 years, but this is year 11. Who were the guys sort of early on in your career, your influential OGs that taught you how to be a leader, both on and off the court in the locker room?
Well, I think back then it was a lot different because you had a lot of veterans in the locker room, a lot of veteran influence. And I just kind of monitored how guys took care of themselves and how they went about their business. And, you know, back then it was, you know, you just got to lead by example and earn your respect from those older guys. It wasn't a lot of talking. So I couldn't, you know, say, hey, man, I need you to practice harder. Or I need you to do this. You know, it wasn't like that back then. That's where you actually lost respect by talking too much. So guys that I kind of, you know, looked at as far as, you know, professionals in the business was like a Bimbo Coles, Clarence Weatherspoon, you know, Sojourner Silgoskis was a little bit older than me. Brevin Knight was maybe a couple years older than me. You know, just guys that I monitored on a daily basis that, you know, I'm like, these guys are going to be around a long time. You know, they're good people. And I just went out there and did my job. And that's where I earned my respect.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it comes up a lot when I talk to these guys about how today there isn't that true veteran leadership in locker rooms in the league. People get cut off from the league when they're like 33, 34, whereas back then, you know, 38, 39 year olds. So that's definitely interesting to hear. Going on to the roster, I mentioned Brandon Roy, one of my favorite players of all time. And this season is unfortunately really the last that we see of Brandon Roy, the superstar, before his injuries really start to get to him. What are your first memories of, you know, walking into practice or a game with Brandon Roy? And what did you see there?
Man, you know, when I went into practice, I was like, this might be one of the most complete rosters that I was on. You know, you got Brandon Roy, you got Joe Prisbilla. I think that was both years he was actually hurt. But, you know, both years were teams that were complete. And I felt that, you know, health-wise, we can compete in the playoffs if we stay healthy. And, you know, to have a guy like that, you know, a budding superstar, you know, the sky's the limit when you got big guys and wings that could defend and run, and then you got a star that you could play through. You know, I was excited about the opportunity. It's just that, you know, the injuries hit him, the injuries hit Greg Oden. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just an unfortunate situation, but, you know, guys were able to step up. It was veterans in that locker room, Marcus Camby, Nick Batum, mm-hmm. Martell Webster, Juwan Howard, you know, Gerald Wallace.
It was next year, but yeah.
both those years were complete teams. And it's just unfortunate that, you know, a guy that's from right up the road in Seattle is a star in this league and he's dealing with injuries. So, you know, he's a good dude. You know, things didn't work out for him like he wanted, but he went on to have a great coaching career in high school back at his hometown. So, you know, it was a good experience for all of us at that time.
You guys win 50 games in a West that's loaded and you only get 65 games out of Brandon Roy, and Greg Oden's season gets cut short, you know, 21 games in. So those are two of your main guys, but you still win 50 games. Do you feel like the ceiling was much higher for that team had it not been for injuries?
Oh, I mean, that team was actually built, you know, now that I think about it, that team health-wise, if we'd have stayed healthy, we could have played with anybody in the league, you know, all the way maybe to possibly the, if everybody's healthy, to possibly make a conference finals run. You know, I even forgot to mention LaMarcus Aldridge. You know what I'm saying? That guy's a Hall of Famer. So, you know, it was a lot of talent, man. It's just unfortunate that the injuries were there. And you got to understand, the Western Conference was super loaded. You know, it was super talented. Teams were loading up. The Dallas Mavericks, I think, won one of those years, the championship. 11.
This was the Lakers.
You know, so you got the Lakers. It was just so competitive, man. So I was just happy to be a part of the Western Conference and the league at that time when it was so competitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get to that deep dive in a little bit. Circling back to Greg Oden, like I mentioned, 21 games, his season is cut short. And then unfortunately, that's kind of the last we see of him for almost 5 years. But in that 21 game stretch, if you remember opening the season, he was really good. I mean, he's averaging like pretty much a double-double, 2.5 blocks. What do you remember from Greg Oden at that time?
Man, at that time, you got to understand, I was a little bit older still.
Yeah, 33?
Yeah, 33 years old. And, you know, it was probably like at that time, maybe two or three guys, maybe two guys that I felt that was kind of like could be like a Shaq replica. You know, I thought Greg Oden could have been that dominant, you know, being that size and that athletic, him. And I think Eddie Curry was a big guy, and these guys, you could move them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was there when he went down with that knee injury, and, you know, it was just crazy. I felt bad for him. And then right after that, I think within the next week, Joe Prisbilla went down with the same injury.
Crazy.
And, you know, it was just tough for the guys. It's hard to stay healthy when you're that big, and, you know, anything can happen. He just jumped up in the air, and I just remember, you know, him falling out, and, you know, but, you know, he's went on to figure it out for the rest of his career and life, and, you know, much success to him. But, you know, those were years that it was very, very competitive, and I was hoping guys stay healthy.
Well, we mentioned the West. This is only one of 2 years ever that every team that made the playoffs had 50 wins. You have OKC at the 8 seed with Durant and Westbrook with 50, and then the Lakers at the 1 seed with Gasol and Kobe at 57. You touched on it a little bit earlier, but kind of just interested to hear if you remember, like, what teams did you remember matching up with the most and maybe enjoy those rivalries? I mean, you got OKC, San Antonio, Utah with Deron Williams, Denver with Melo and Chauncey, Phoenix, who you guys see in the playoffs with Nash and Amari. Was there one team or maybe matchup that you remember from that time that, one, maybe pushed you, and two, you just have memories of today?
Man, I remembered all those games, you know, especially the ones with, you know, a team that trades you, you know, you know, I still remember going to sit in the stands to watch Denver and the Lakers in the conference finals. And, you know, I looked forward to playing against that team. Of course, you know, the Dallas Mavericks with Kid Terry and the Whiskey and, you know, the veterans they had on that team and the Lakers, I mean, the Jazz, the Rockets, every team was good. And I just looked for it. It was a challenge every night just to, you know that every night you couldn't take a night off. You couldn't take a night off. Guys were hungry. Guys were competitive. And then you got the young KD. That team was probably the biggest team that, the Lakers were big. But as far as wings, like that OKC team with Harden, Durant, Jeff Green, Cephalosa, Ibaka. I mean, it was like the league started to change right before my eyes with the amount of talent that was in the West. So, you know, I enjoyed all the games playing against those guys.
And then at the point guard position specifically, I think it's interesting. We have kind of a changing of generations, like Steve Nash and Jason Kidd, who are still in the West. They're kind of, you know, at the tail end of their careers. But then you got guys like Westbrook, Rajon Rondo, Deron Williams, Chris Paul all coming up. So there's a real change of guard. I know that they're all great, but was there one or two guys from that team maybe that I mentioned that you just really liked matching up against and maybe kind of gave you a little bit of difficulties at times?
man, they all started to give me difficulties, you know, especially as I'm older. And you go from Garden, Chauncey Billups, Darren Williams, Tony Parker, you know, we were all getting older. And then you got Chris Paul, then you got Lillard, you got Westbrook with the young legs, you got Curry coming in. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like, what's going on here? You know, it was like a hybrid. You know, they took the game from the point guard, the little guard position, and it just like went over that cliff as far as, you know, the shooting, the ball handling skills, you know, just their movement and shooting alone, they just took it to another level. So, you know, those type of guards that played on all three levels, they could shoot it from deep, they could shoot it from mid-range, they could ball handle, they could finish. And that was something that took the league to where it was today once those guys started coming in.
Anybody in the league today, like, remind you of yourself? I mean, like a true floor general, maybe not jumping through the gym, but is able to really just, like, be a elite game manager without that explosive athleticism or three-level scoring?
Man, I don't really think about it that much. You know, I like Lonzo Ball. You know,
I like that. Yeah.
Of course, he's a lot taller than me, but, you know, he's a pass first guy. And, you know, a lot of people criticize him for his shooting, but, you know, he's proven to be a pretty good shooter. If you put him, you know, his career stats versus a Jason Kidd, as far as 3-pointers made and attempted, he's right there. The thing with me is, you know, I was an opportunist shooter from deep, you know, and I got Chris, he's a bad shooter. Well, you know, if you watch the NBA nowadays, guys don't hover and shove out 3-point half court shots at the end of quarters. And I didn't shoot a lot of threes, but, you know, at the end of quarters, I say for my career, I probably shot about 30 or 40 shots from half court, trying to make a shot at the end of the quarter. And then that make your percentages go down. So, you know, the analytics part, that's why you don't see guys taking those type of shots, because it's a low risk shot. And it messes with their, you know, their 3-point percentage. So, you know, I thought I was a great shooter, but, you know, that's just not what my specialty was. Now, you know, it's three levels. You know, these guys are shooting the ball. They wake up and it's encouraged to shoot that three. You know, mm-hmm. You got guys shooting 10 to 13 3-pointers a game. One guy where, you know, Chauncey Billups was a great shooter. He probably shooting like maybe four.
If that.
Three or four 3-pointers, and the Darren Williams of the world, those guys maybe shoot 3 or 4 3-pointers a game because they had to be floor generals first. So, you know, the game is a lot different now.
It definitely is. There is always a soft spot in my heart for the 2000s, early 2010s games. NBA playoff action is nonstop at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on any NBA team to win and get $150 in free bets if they do. If you are looking to turn a small bet into a big payday, look no further than DraftKings Sportsbook. With their same game parlays, you can do just that. Take player combos, money lines, spreads, total threes made, and more, and boom, you have a shot for an even bigger payout. Right now, all customers can place a same-game parlay with 3 or more legs and get a free backup with $25 if one leg does not hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FORGOTTENSEASONS. Bet just $5 on any NBA team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. That's promo code FORGOTTENSEASONS only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Pivoting a little bit back to the Blazers, like I said, 50 wins in the regular season. If you were to remember or describe the team's offense, thinking about what Coach Nate McMillan preached in practices, you know, what were your guys' principles that you tried to bring into every game that maybe came down from you and Nate?
I think Nate McMillan is a great coach. You know, he played in the league in the era where I thought the era was probably the best era of basketball.
early 90s, late 80s?
Yeah, like the late 80s and to probably the mid 90s, 98 with the Bulls. He played against those guys, so he understands, you know, basketball on all levels, and that's the respect that I have for him. You know, I think the team that we had was so versatile. We could play up-tempo or we can play slow basketball, you know, and throw the ball into the post to Greg Oden or LaMarcus Aldridge. So, you know, but at that time, the league was starting to change. You know, the league wanted to see more up-tempo basketball, less hand-checking. And I think Nate McMillan got caught in the kind of in the middle of transitioning, you know, letting the reins go a little bit and letting us get up and down the court. So we were methodical, but it was like an opportunity to run. We'll take advantage. If not, we had to execute. And I understood that. So, you know, it was just the transitioning years of the younger teams coming in and, you know, getting up more field goal attempts. So Nate definitely did a great job with us. You know, unfortunately, it was tough for him because he had to deal with the injuries. But, you know, he helped build that team and that organization to a respectable organization that transferred over to Lillard coming in.
Definitely. Shout out to Nate McMillan. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about LaMarcus Aldridge because we did kind of gloss over him. You mentioned Hall of Famer, probably one of the best mid-range shooters for a big ever, maybe we could say. You're coming off a pick and roll. I mean, do you prefer playing with a pick and pop, an elite pick and pop presence, or more of a roller, or does it not matter for you?
It doesn't matter for me. I knew over 50% of the time, if we ran a pick and roll, I knew that I was able to create a good shot for somebody or myself. And I knew LaMarcus Aldridge from 15 to 18 feet, he was pretty much automatic. So it was always my bailout to if I was able to create some. I know LaMarcus, you know, just watching him in warmups, he's taking that shot. It was like, you know, a layup for him. So, you know, not only do teams have to rotate, then I can attack the basket and, you know, kick the ball out to the other side of the court. And I just enjoyed, he actually probably one of my favorite players that I played with because he was so versatile. You know, he could run to the rim, you could throw it to the rim and catch the lobs, you could throw it in the post and get out of his way. And then his pick and pop game, you know, was probably, I say, one of the best in the history of basketball.
Definitely. And he's still going too. Still kicking. So 50 wins in the regular season, you guys go into the playoffs and you get the Suns, Steve Nash, Amari, Jason Richardson. If you look at the stats, this is kind of the Jason Richardson series. He averages like 25 a game, shoots it at over 50% from three. What do you remember today from that series?
Man, that series, man. I also remember Brandon Roy, you know,
fighting.
You know, it was out pretty much the whole year, and then Nate threw him in there, I think, when it was like a closeout game, I believe. I'm not sure, but, you know, that was a team that was transitioning. That's the Mike D'Antoni era. I think mm-hmm. Steve Nash was MVP 2 years in a row around that time. I'm not sure.
Yep.
But the way they played was the way teams play now. You know, Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, and then you surround the three with Jason Richardson, Dudley, Grant Hill. I think Barbosa was on that team. I don't know if it was Barbosa or Goran Dragic.
Both of them.
They were shooting that three at such a high clip that, you know, you had to worry about, you know, Nash and Stoudemire. But, you know, that series was won at the three-point line. And, you know, they shot the ball a lot more than us. And, you know, we played methodical basketball, but the game was just so up-tempo. You know, it was tough for us to adjust, you know, playing against, you know, Hall of Famers like that.
You surprised that, like, a Mike D'Antoni team has never made the finals? And you think there's a reason for that? Or you think it's just kind of the grind of the postseason bounces go in certain ways?
I think Mike D'Antoni is probably one of the greatest geniuses ever to come through the NBA as far as his style of basketball, you know, and I'm not going to say that, you know, his style can't win a championship. You got to look at the teams that he was playing against. You know what I'm saying? You got to stack San Antonio Spurs was always good.
The Lakers.
Then on the East Coast, you got Miami, you got, you know, it was great teams everywhere. So it just, you know, a time and an era where, you know, you got the Lakers, you got the Suns, you got, you know, the Spurs, you got Denver, you know, like it's hard to win, you know, when you're playing against teams that's having three guys that are Hall of Famers. I mean, he wasn't going to beat San Antonio. You know, I don't know if they beat the Lakers, you know. So, I mean, his system can win. It's just about, you know, the teams that are in the conference at that time and what type of players. So I liked his system and the way he played. And that's why the teams now are playing the way they are now, because of the way he plays.
Is that a coach that you wish you could have got the chance to play for and run that offense?
Well, I think all the coaches are pretty much similar. It's just about how they deal with the egos and personalities of the players. I think the one thing that made D'Antoni different was his style, and he encouraged the guys and gave them freedom. You know, there wasn't any repercussions for those guys jacking up 35, 43 pointers, you know, and that's the way, you know, back then, like, okay, you know, this 3-pointer is not a good shot unless you're wide open. Now there's no repercussions. So, you know, maybe I could have played for him because, you know, then maybe my stats have been higher far from shooting from three and just being able to create, you know, a lot more and do a lot more on my shoulders playing for a coach like him. So it would have probably been cool to play for him because of the freedom.
You think we would have seen a little bit more 50 balls from you? If didn't mention it, but this is the year that you score 52 against Dallas, your career high. One of my favorite 50-point games ever. What do you remember from that game? Brandon Roy was out. I think Odin was out.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it was a fun time, but it was a stressful time just because of those guys being injured. You know, the responsibilities on my shoulder as a veteran, and it was just something that I put on myself. But you know, that was just a game where, you know, it just flowed that way. It just flowed that way. I didn't go looking to say, okay, I'm gonna go try to score these amount of points. That's just the way the game developed. The one thing that I liked, it was against a veteran team and it was against a team that won the championship. So, mm-hmm. You know, at that time, I think Dallas was, you know, number one, number two ranked defense in the league.
They got Jason Kidd too.
Jason Terry, Barrera, Sean Marion, Stevenson, Tyson Chandler. I mean, that team was stacked. So, you know, to be able to do it on their court against, you know, shoot, they might have 5-6 Hall of Famers on that team. I don't know. But, you know, it was definitely a good feeling. Mm.
No doubt. So you guys lose to Phoenix in 6. And then sort of just talk about quickly the next year, you guys have a similar season. 48 wins, I think. You guys lose to Dallas in the first round again in 6. Then you're traded to Denver. How did that all just shake out, you know, the next year in Portland and then you getting traded?
Man, I mean, I think my whole career, and every NBA player will tell you that, you know, it goes by so fast and you wish certain things didn't happen. And, the initial trade early on for me going from Cleveland to the Clippers, I never wanted that trade, but it was, I mean, that trade had to happen for the Cleveland Cavaliers to get LeBron. Yeah. And then, you know, the actual, you know, trade that kind of hit me was, you know, we had a great team in Denver and then I'm the first to get traded. I'm like, you know, I kind of took it personal, but then, you know, I wanted to be there and, you know, things happen for a reason. And, you know, I found my way back to Denver and, you know, with a younger group. And I have fun, you know, George Karl gave me the opportunity to, you know, just kind of do things and flow things with the team on my own and be creative. And we kind of fed off of each other, you know, so I was pretty much, that was probably like, you know, more of an extension of the coach, probably the best situation for me as far as really being an extension of the coach and him allowing me to do things and make decisions for myself and the players. Mm.
Well, I mean, it all resulted in one of the most storied careers that we've seen at the point guard position. With all of your years of experience and knowledge, I do have to ask you a few questions, just little quick hitters. Who are the guys, you know, that came before you? If you could name maybe three or four at the point guard position that you studied as you were growing up that you tried to take pieces of their game, put into yours?
Man, of course I watched Magic Johnson just because I'm an LA kid and it was Showtime era, just the way he passed and made the game fun for his teammates. I think his teammates enjoyed playing with him. So I watched him a lot growing up. I watched Gary Payton. You know, I got a chance to play against Gary Payton too. And, you know, I tried to take something, not just from the point guards, but I would watch Kevin McHale. I would watch James Worthy. I would watch Mark Jackson. You know, I just tried to take something from every player, just watching TV and watching how they post up or how they pass. And I just kind of applied that to my game. And my thing was going into the NBA, I knew I could score the ball, but that, you know, the NBA is a game of with guys that are professional guys that do something great. They all do something great. You're either a great shooter, a great rebounder, a great defender, a great passer. So I wanted to be I know I could score, everybody could score, but I wanted to stand out a different way as far as let me be the best passer and lead by example and be available at all times to the point where, you know, guys will say, you know what, I want to play with Miller. I want to play with Miller. You know, he's going to pass me the ball. You know, he's going to help me get in a position to get a nice contract or something like that. So that's what I kind of prided myself on through my NBA career. So I watched all those guys, Isaiah Thomas, John Stockton. You know, I learned a lot from John Stockton just by being in Utah and being that close to the Jazz and being able to play pickup balls in the summer and see how they carry themselves. So, you know, it just wasn't just one person. It was a group of people that just stood out that helped me develop into an NBA player.
You mentioned being available. You played, I think, 12 or 13 seasons where you played all 82. Was there any behind, like, obviously you're taking care of your body. Any secrets to the trade of keeping yourself available, or was it just playing through injuries, staying tough? And then what do you think of today with all the load management and 82 game seasons being almost non-existent?
Well, I think, you know, for me, it was a pride thing and wanting to be on the court and not wanting to fall out of favor with management or a coach. It was just my makeup. You know, I enjoy playing basketball. I enjoy competing. You know, I didn't worry about the stats, mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, if I did do load management, I probably would have, instead of averaging 12, 13, 14 points a game, I'd probably be averaging 18, 19 points a game if I had load management. But my thing was, it wasn't about stats. It was about, you know, this is a dream come true for a lot of these guys. You know, you grow up, you're watching TV, you're watching people you look up to and you play the sport, and then you get there. And I'm like, you know, hey, I've realized my dream. I'm gonna get over 100% out of my body. I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get the most out of my body. And I wanna play against the greatest players ever. So I wasn't gonna take any nights off. And that's the issue that I have with a lot of the players today. You know, you have these dreams, you know, the Ben Simmons of the world, Kyrie's. And if you look across the NBA board, I think probably over 50% of players probably only play like 64, 65 games. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they do that and then they go ask for a lot of money. And it's great to get all that money, but you got to be able to back it up and be selfless and be available for your team. So that's something I took pride in, you know. And the thing is, when I walked away from the game, it was on my own terms because I felt like I got the most out of my body. I got the most out of my skills and I did everything that I wanted to do while in the NBA, except win a championship or make an all-star team. But I, you know, my thing was being around guys and helping guys get nice contracts, you know, passing the ball and have fun playing basketball, being a kid out there and not letting the business of basketball, you know, ruin your passion for the sport. So that's why I was so committed to the game.
Respect. What one last one before we get you out of here. I want to hear, in your opinion, not the top point guards of all time, but if you can give me four or five floor generals that you look at the history of basketball, you think are the cream of the crop.
Man, Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, John Stockton, Jason Kidd, Gary Payton, those guys, and I wasn't able to see the Oscar Robertsons, you know what I'm saying? You know, but I'm sure he was a great leader. But these are the guys that I saw in my era, the youngest being Jason Kidd, probably of that group. And I put Chris Paul in there, you know, the things that he's accomplished, you know, in his career for that size, you know, he's up there. Those guys are great leaders, great floor generals. They led by example, and their feel and understanding for the game. And I'm sure it's a lot more other guys. And some of them are not even point guards. Their feel for the game and understanding of the game is on such a level. It's like having a PhD in basketball or something like that. You know what I'm saying? If I had to give that analogy.
I love it.
You know, to academics, these guys are professionals in their crafts. And you know, they're people that you want to be around, people that you want to listen to and soak up as much as you can. And that's what I admire about those type of talents. They're selfless people and they want to help people around them get better. And that's what I admired about those type guys.
I love that. PhDs in basketball. I'm a steal that and credit you. and then just lastly, I mean, you know, you've been away from the NBA for, what is it, six years now. Any thoughts or plans on if and when maybe you want to put yourself back, you know, into that league, or are you just chilling away from it?
I don't know. You know, I'm a giving person. I've been sitting down and I watch the sport. You know, every night I'm watching college basketball or NBA basketball. So I'm still a student of the game and I'm watching how the game evolves and where I could possibly find my niche. You know, six years and two of those years of COVID, you know, and it was a chance for me to recover. You know, recover and feel like, you know, my body was so beat up that I didn't even know it was beat up, you know, because I was used to the lifestyle and the grind. But, you know, those things, you know, catch up with you when you start to get older. So it's just, you know, recovering mentally, physically. But I do feel that, you know, I can provide some knowledge and help with the game, whether on the NBA level or on the college level. I think more probably on the college level and high school level, because the kids are losing the knowledge of the game and how to play basketball the right way. So I think I would be fit possibly on the college level just to teach the game and have that time to spend. You know, the professional game is in good hands. The NBA is in good hands with the amount of knowledge and people around the league. I think there needs to be more players coaching on the college level, retired players, teaching the game the right way, rather than, you know, just, you know, taking it for granted. So that's where I see myself at, hopefully in the next few years.
Well, I think any team would be lucky to have you as a mind and a voice inside that organization. So look forward to seeing how things shake out and where you end up. Again, thank you for your time today. 2010 Blazers, interesting time period in Blazers history. I think some unfortunate turns. Would have been great to see what would have come out of it if their big guns would have stayed healthy, and maybe you could have stayed there along that ride. But just thank you for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you guys for tapping in this week. We will be back next week. Got a big guest coming. Definitely keep your eyes out for that. Drop a rating and a review, and I'll see you next week. Peace.
T
Teachers, administrators, and other school staff play an important role.
Education can be a shining light, and it's really the equalizer for everybody.
You are making a difference in people's lives, including your students.
You can have a really bad day at school and still realize that what you're doing is making a bigger difference.
We are the best profession in the world next to doctors, but even a doctor had a teacher.
Find what helps at cdcfoundation.org/how right now.